Hey guys, and we're back. Today with me, I have Carrie Bentley, and she is an expert in productivity and systems creations. Hey, Carrie.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
It's going well. I'm glad Skype is finally cooperating.
Awesome.
You know, it's like the last thing we should be thinking about, you know, when we're trying to talk business, is why is Skype not working?
It's all of the elements that make it work together. You know, I don't think people recognize how much effort podcasters put into things like the technology and the audio, and that your Wi-Fi has to have a high connection and, you know, a soundproofed room. So there's a lot that goes into to shows like this.
It does. And it's funny. I've listened to Sam Harris. I'm not sure if you know who that is.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, pretty much talking about a topic which, you know, most of us don't really touch on. But it's like, you know, podcasts should not be free.
You know,
And I was listening to it at first. I was like, Sam, what are you talking about? What are you getting into? And then after a while, I was like, you know what? You're right. Like, you are right. Like, no one's thinking anything else should be free, right? Everything else has commercials or is being bought. But podcasts is like, oh, you know, we all expect it to be free forever. And it's like, well, I don't know.
It's so true. Actually, when I first got introduced to podcasts, and I'm sure people listening would feel the same way, I was very surprised to learn I could get access for free. I definitely expected it to be at least $1 or $2 per episode, because that's what I'm used to paying for, like, music soundtracks.
Right. Yeah, it's so interesting. Yeah, but it was just something that just came up the other day, and I was like, huh. And, you know, I didn't really think about it much until then. It's like with online courses, right? When you think of, like, Udemy, and, you know, some people ask me, like, I have 1,200 courses on Udemy, and can I sell them? And I'm like, dude, first of all, you made a big mistake doing that.
Yep, I've been there. I've been there, done that, and reversed course.
Yeah, and then the second thing is, I'm like, you know, one, you just devalued your courses so much. You know, it's going to be kind of tough going from this $3 course to, like, you know, something that actually makes you money.
Right, yeah. Yep, that is so true. I actually have a funny story about that I'm happy to share when we get into the sort of marketing part of the conversation.
Yeah, so we'll hold off on that. The first thing, though, like, what are you teaching? I've seen so many good testimonials, and they're all over the place, too. Some people are saying productivity, some are saying inbox zero, you know, and all this stuff sounds very good to me. So what is it? What do you actually do in a Lifehack Bootcamp?
Yeah, absolutely. So just a little bit of background on who we are. So my husband and I run Lifehack Bootcamp. And what's really funny is we were not productivity experts or even good at productivity as little as 10 years ago. We were kind of that couple, you know, working in New York, working, you know, 80-hour weeks, and just thinking that working harder and harder and sort of like hustling was the way to get ahead. And we started feeling like, you know, pretty early on that something wasn't right. You know, the value equation was off somehow. But, you know, you're in New York and everyone kind of feels like that. So we didn't think too much about it until we both diagnosed stress-related illnesses. So we learned that we had autoimmune conditions that had been brought on by this stress, or, you know, contributed to significantly by stress. And our doctors, you know, looked at us like we were crazy when they learned that we worked 80-hour weeks and had these, you know, very stressful Wall Street corporate jobs. And so they really were like, okay, you know, you could keep going like this, but you are going to face some really severe health consequences. So that's when we really were like, whoa, yikes. You know, our bodies are giving us a signal that we need to start over. We need to think about ourselves first and not think about what society wants us to optimize for and figure out how to design a life that really works for us. And productivity was what allowed us to do that. You know, we learned about what other people were doing to get more productive, to systematize, to still have as the impact of working 80 hours a week, but working just 30 hours a week. And so that's what really broke us through when we realized, wow, you can work smarter, not harder, and you can have the difference that you want to create in the world without sacrificing your health or your family or your relationships in the process. So the reason why we started Lifehack Bootcamp was to train other people in how to do that same thing. So how to get things done so that they can sort of solve life on their own terms, you know, figure out what's important to them and what's not, and really optimize for those things.
You know, when you mentioned that New York story, brought a lot of memories back. I was in New York too. Same thing happened. I had like autoimmune problems, big time too, from trying to do too much at once. You know, I was doing, I was going to school. I had a full-time job and I was still doing music full-time. So I think I slept like 3-4 hours per night. And yeah, after a while, like, you know, nothing helped. Like I did it all. I went to all the doctors, chiropractors, acupuncturists, tried all the supplements. And the main thing was just, you got to work less.
Yeah.
But when I did that, I guess I'm one of these extreme people. You know, I went in the complete extreme. I was like, I'm not going to work at all.
The 4-hour work week direction.
Yeah, that was a great and horrible book at the same time. Yeah.
It spoiled us all.
It sort of did. You know, I went the passive income route, which, you know, it's never passive and always bites you in the ass at the end.
Yeah.
Which happened, right? And then back to the hustle. And then I figured out another passive income way and back into the extreme, right? It's been so hard for me to get that balance. And when you say going from 80 hours to 30 hours, that sounds nice. But how do you actually fit the productivity into those 30 hours? You know, I know we don't actually work 80 hours. A lot of the time we're just burnt out and looking at the screen.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, but I'm curious, how do you get so much done in 30 hours? Like, what is the system?
Yeah, definitely. And what's funny about working 80 hours a week is a lot of the times you're spending that extra, say, 20 hours between, you know, 60 and 80 fixing mistakes that you've made because you're already burnt out. And so it's an incredibly inefficient way to be spending your time regardless. But to answer your question very directly, and I'm so excited you asked this, you know, the biggest secret, there's two secrets. Number one is you have to have the ability to turn what you know into something that you do. You have to be able to overcome things like perfectionism and procrastination. You know, those cannot be part of your space, part of your week, because otherwise there's no way, you know, you'll end up working more and more because you never feel like you're done or you never feel like you're good enough. So that's sort of part one. Part two is actually a little bit counterintuitive. Part two is you have to recognize that some things are going to get done and some things will simply not get done, and that's okay. We are so diehard about finding the 20% of what you're doing right now that gets you 80% of the results. And that is what we focus on every single week. And I actually have a tool to share if you'd like me to that helps you identify that 20%. Hmm. But the sort of the hack here is if you got your number one priority done every single week without fail, and you were able to end every week feeling like, yes, you know, I got my number one thing done, not just my number one thing, but something that really moves my business forward in a substantial way, something that's really important. And sure, maybe that means that something else didn't get done and, you know, there's a fire burning somewhere else that is simply not going to get put out. But yet, over the course of a year, you will find that you've accelerated your business massively. And eventually, that sort of becomes your new normal. You're just used to things not happening, you know, because you, let me put it this way, you don't have to do everything for yourself. What you end up doing is finding systems or other people to do the rest of that work that you used to think you had to do.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, the three books, which I can really recommend to the listeners now, which deal with this, are The One Thing, Essentialism, and Churning Pro. I think all of these books really kind of go into what you're talking about now. But let's get back to that tool. Yeah, can you share that?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, the one thing for me is the one thing, the book that is one of my all time favorite books. I've probably read it about seven times. So definitely go and pick that up. Gary Keller and Jay Papasan are absolutely fantastic in that book. But yeah, so in terms of a tool that you can use right now and that it sort of designed it to be sticky, meaning that it's easy to remember, because let's be honest, you know, if a tool is too complicated or it's too hard for you to remember, you're just not going to use it when the moment is needed, when the time comes. So this tool is designed for you to remember it easily and actually use it both on a weekly basis or even on a quarterly, monthly, yearly basis. So, you know, you're thinking about the right things to get done in your week, and you have about 10 different competing priorities, right, that you think they all absolutely need to get done. And the problem is we often have this feeling that we end our week and we realize that we didn't even make enough traction on our top priorities. Mm-hmm. In the middle of the week, we thought that things like, you know, meetings and emails and really important messages from our team were the top priority. But then for some reason, we feel like we've let ourselves down on Friday. So that's the sort of the feeling that I want you to avoid moving forward. So we created something we call champagne moments. And a champagne moment is a really easy exercise you can do on a weekly basis or even a daily basis to sort out the important things from the seemingly important things. And a lot of the books about this talk about this, how everything seems important, and that's actually a trap. So here's the tool, and just think about, as you're hearing this, think about what this would be for you right now. So what could you do this week such that if you got it done, you would be so happy, you'd just be so pleased with yourself that you would literally stop by the store on the way home, you would grab a bottle of champagne, and you would pop it open with your partner, your significant other, and be like, yes, I really got something important done this week. So think about it in that way. You know, you're not just celebrating a little bit. It's not like, oh yeah, it's Friday, you know, I'm going to go and pop a beer and hang out with some friends. I'm talking about what could you get done this week that would deserve popping a bottle of champagne? And what's great about this exercise is it instantly strips away the shallow work that's on your plate, and it really gets you thinking about the deep work, which is the work that moves your life forward in a big way. And hint, deep work is often something that's not even on your to-do list right now because it's something that no one else is telling you to do, or and it's not even something you have to do, but it's actually the thing that moves your life forward. You know, because I think a lot of people, and I used to work in corporate, so this was my reality every day, we're so used to just grinding through emails and sitting in meetings, and we start thinking that that is the good work. But no one ever looked back at someone's life and said, wow, Carrie, you answered a million emails. Wow, what a champion. I mean, sure, like emails and meetings, they're necessary sometimes, but they're not your legacy, all right? That's not why you started your business. That's not why you were put here on the planet. They're simply shallow work. So we ask our clients, identify a champagne moment every week. And it doesn't have to take a lot of time. It doesn't need to be something that takes you a full day or 2 days. It could be something that could be done in 30 minutes sometimes. But it needs to be leveraged. It needs to push your life forward in a big way. So a good example that one of our clients did was we ran this exercise with him, and he realized, wow, I have to fire one of my employees. Now, that was his champagne moment because this particular person was dragging his entire team down. That means that the entire performance of the team wasn't as optimal as it could be, and it was causing problems in his business and actually costing him money every single month. But yet he had been delaying firing this person because, of course, no one wants to fire someone, right? It's very emotionally challenging. Yeah, it sucks. So he realized that was his champagne moment. And so he sat down with that employee and got that done that week. And, you know, it went incredibly well, lucky for him. And come Friday, you know, even though that hadn't taken him more than a couple hours to do, he felt enormously relieved and just felt like celebrating. You know what I mean?
I do. I just had that happen too. And I was dreading it. I think I procrastinated about 4 months before I fired the person.
Yep.
Yeah, it was a long time.
I've been there myself. I've been there. I mean, I think I let someone stay on our team for about a year before letting them go. So definitely learned the lesson the hard way there. But I mean, a champagne moment could be something, obviously not something, it doesn't have to be something like that. A really common champagne moment for small business owners is booking new sales calls, for example. So if you're an online course seller like I am, then the goal for every single week is making sure that your sales pipeline is full. So that could be a really great champagne moment.
Yeah, we'll definitely get to that soon. Here's a question. So once you get down to the 30 hours, right, and you get your champagne moments in, you know, we're all really good as business people creating goals and plans for our business. But most of us, and I know I'm included, we suck creating plans for our free time. Any advice there?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't mind it when business owners don't plan for their free time sometimes because, you know, their business is such a hobby. And for me, for example, I do it with my husband. And so it really does feel rewarding. But after a while, a couple of years of doing it, then definitely I think it's important to expand and really make sure that you're living a full life. So the way my husband and I did it for the past couple of years is we actually traveled around the world. So every single month we would move to a new country. And so it was incredibly fulfilling. And it made it easy for us to work less because we were so excited about getting out of the house and going and exploring a new city. So that was really great for us. But for small business owners who maybe aren't traveling right now, what I recommend is scheduling your free time. So figuring out what it is that you've been wanting to do. Is it reading more books? Is it picking up salsa or learning a new language or going out with friends? Like whatever that is, it should be scheduled and planned for pretty much just like you would plan for your work. You know, I often have a to-do list or a calendar that's the same size for my personal life as it is for my actual work. And that works really, really well because then in the moment, you're not going to plan to go out to dinner with friends when you're tired and your cognitive load has been depleted for the day. What you're going to do is open up Netflix, right? Because that's the easy solution to unplug. So the sort of the hack for personal time is simply to schedule it and schedule it in advance.
Yeah, you know, I just looked at my calendar and it's really missing the free time tabs. It's just not there. It's just, the free time just kind of happens. I mean, we do have some stuff scheduled. Right. Like, you know, we'll go out, be social. We have some lunches, things like that, the gym. But the free time, it's not really scheduled.
Some people complain that, I don't want to schedule every minute of my day because that makes me feel trapped and I don't like that. But what I would say is you could even schedule unstructured time. So a lot of families that we work with will schedule time on Saturdays that it's just unstructured, but it has to be family time. So everyone knows like, hey, we're probably going to leave the house and we're probably going to do something. They just don't know what it is yet. So sort of the excitement's still there, but it's planned for.
Yeah, I have that on Sundays. It's just an unplug day. I just don't care about anything other than just, you know, whatever's in front of us. Like, I don't want to do work. But, you know, on regular days, like it would help. I think to just schedule 2 or 3 hours of unstructured time just to kind of, you just even reflect on things, you know, because otherwise you're always grabbing for the phone or seeing if the emails are coming in, and they always come in. The emails never stop. Never, ever. You know, sometimes my team, I think they feel like they're productive by just sending me emails, you know, like they just show their productivity. And I'm like, like, why are you asking me this nonsense? And I'm like, you know, but.
that's easy to do with email. And what's interesting is email has made communication a lot easier. You know, if you think about a world without email, then, you know, you kind of cringe a little bit. But definitely at the same time, I think it's become this thing that people assume, they almost use it as their task list and their productivity list, and they think about themselves working inside of email. But, you know, if you think back to the champagne moment exercise, I have pretty much never met someone whose champagne moment even involved email. Like, it might have involved sending some emails, but it very rarely involves answering emails. And that applies to your team members as well. You know, they probably have something far more valuable they could be doing for your business outside of email.
Yeah, we have that talk once every couple months. Like, you know, what's the valuable thing? And don't say email. Like, we actually do have that talk. But yeah, you're right. Well, I don't cringe when I think about the world without email. I always say, you know, when I was little, we had no cell phones, no email, nothing, and we all survived. So, like, you know, I tell my girlfriend, like, when we go up somewhere, I'm like, you know, she's bringing her phone. She's like, oh, did you bring your phone? No. Like, what do I need my phone for? She's like, what if we get lost? I was like, are you seriously worried about being lost? Like, every single person around here has got a phone. Like, everyone we pass by has a phone. It's not like someone can't call if something happens. You know?
It's so funny that you bring up the phone. Yeah, because both my husband and myself, we don't even have a data plan on our phone. You know, we can use it with Wi-Fi, but that's it. So we don't bring it when we go out. We literally leave it in the apartment because why would we bring it outside? You know, it's hard to find Wi-Fi outside of the apartment because we live in Colombia, in Medellin. So it's freeing. It's literally freeing to not have that extension to your arm and have that connection to the world. And it makes you realize that sometimes when we reach for our phone, it's because we don't want to focus on something important that we need to work on, or because we're actually bored and we want to distract ourselves. And that to me is it's a fun game to play with yourself and sort of see, like, could I just sit and be bored for a while? That actually feels really good and really refreshing sometimes. Or am I reaching for my phone because I'm avoiding, you know, writing the script for a new webinar that we want to do, something that would really move my business forward, right?
Yeah, I can just see at least one listener is thinking, oh, yeah, they live in Medellin, and that's why they don't bring their phones out. They're going to get it stolen.
Well, that is true, too. So that's an added motivation. I've got a pretty nice phone, and I don't want it to get stolen.
Yeah, because I had a lot of friends pass through that city, and they're like, you know, they're like, yeah, it's great if you stay within these four blocks, you know.
No, it's not. I don't think it's as bad as people say. Plus, it's been modernized drastically over the last 5 years or so. But yeah, I mean, it's a concern. Even in other cities around the world. I mean, in the U.S., people generally don't have an issue with their phones being stolen. But pretty much everywhere else we've been, you know, it's a concern.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know Medellin is one and Vietnam is two. In Thailand, that's where I'm staying now. Like, you can pretty much leave your phone. No one's going to touch it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's not bad. But yeah, that's the two, the main ones. Like Japan, too. I stayed in Japan for a while. And, you know, you could leave your phone and just go out, come back tomorrow. Like, that phone's going to be laying there just the same.
Japan is awesome. Oh, my gosh. I've never been to a country quite like Japan.
It's great. But it also kind of eats away at you after a while. You know, because everything is just too structured. It's just too perfect. Like, you can't, there's no freedom. There's none of that wild, wild west, you know? It's just too much in extreme in one direction. Let's go into the course marketing a little bit. You know, you've got a successful course. You mentioned the Udemy courses. Yeah, tell us that story. And then, you know, I want to know how you fill up your sales funnel. Like, what's working, what's not?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, Udemy, I mean, I think a lot of online course creators have been there. And, you know, when it came out, even when I got introduced to it, which was maybe 3 years ago, it was like, oh my gosh, you can get access to all sorts of crazy knowledge for like $10. They're always like giving away courses practically for free that are supposedly so high value. And so we were thinking like, wow, look, you know, maybe we could go for scale. And we could just sell thousands and thousands and thousands of courses, and then we would be successful. And so, you know, like everybody else, we put our course on Udemy, and then we realized that we don't even control when they do the sales on Udemy. So we have zero control over when they choose to put the course on a discount. And we started having all sorts of problems selling it outside of Udemy because people would just Google us and the Udemy was so highly ranked in SEO that would be the first thing that came up. And so, you know, long story short, essentially we were like, wait a second, people are snapping up the course. Number one, we have a problem with it because people aren't listening to it. They're buying it because it's cheap, but then there's no commitment to actually follow through and implement what we're teaching. And so there's no impact. And the reason why we have this business is to create impact. And we're never going to get, you know, good reviews and referrals if we don't create results for people. And we can't get results if they don't learn it. So that was the sort of the main reason. And then the second reason was just like, you're giving up your power in marketing. You know, you're not able to create your own value proposition and defend your value and create a commitment. So it devalues your brand so much. So we ended up moving away from Udemy literally in a couple months after we got on the platform, because we realized this, that it was actually going to ruin our business instead of catapult our business, which is what we thought it would do.
Yeah, I tell this to people all the time. You know, with Udemy, you can't even really drive paid traffic because you'll never get money back for that. You know, it's an impossible way to market something. You know, and then when you get those discounts too, and plus they only pay you like $2 or $3 for like every $10 someone buys from you, it's insane. You know, I just think it's such a crappy program. You know, some people ask me like, what should I go on, Udemy or Thinkific or Teachable? I'm like, just anything but Udemy, anything.
Yep. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And so I'm glad that we decided to move away from that and actually create a brand for ourselves. And we've had the brand for about 3 years and have seen a lot of success with it. And we're really, really pleased, especially in the last year. So I'm excited to do this podcast because we've actually had 5x growth in 2018 versus 2017.
Wow.
And so there's definitely some things that have clicked into place for us that have allowed us to start to grow and scale.
What do you think those were? Because that's pretty good. You know, 5x over 1 year, that's pretty good.
I'll take 5x any year. Yeah. Any year, that's a good thing. Yeah, so I would say there's a couple things that really made the difference for us, and I'm going to get through all of them because there are a couple things. So number one is we decided to pursue a 1,000 true fans strategy. So for all of the marketing nerds out here, you know about Seth Godin's 1,000 true fans strategy, which is all about how you don't need the entire world to know about you. You just need to have 1,000 people who really, really, really love you, who will buy anything that you put out. And this really gave us the freedom to just love up on our core demographic. And instead of trying to go broad and serving everybody, really just niche down and serve only people who are the right fit for our product, really. So that, I said, I know that sounds sort of vague and markety, I guess, but really that's the lens through which we look at all of our promotions and all of our partnerships. And that's what's made the biggest difference in terms of developing relationships and making sales.
That's pretty big, yeah. The 1,000 true fans, if you can actually get them, you have a huge business. I mean, people don't understand just how much 1,000 true fans will spend, you know, if they really get the value out of what you're selling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of the times it's, you know, we do have a high premium priced product suite. We have some lower priced items as well, but the main source of our revenue is through our high ticket items.
And
what that gave us the freedom to do was just give away value up front without feeling like, oh man, there's something on the back end that we're giving away too much, I guess. We're giving away too much. They're not going to get anything out of the product. And the reason for that is because of the 1,000 true fan strategy, we have absolutely perfected our product. Because if you think about it, if you want to have 1,000 true fans, then sure, your personality has to be good. They have to like you as a person too, but your product better really get them some results. You know, it better be something they walk away being like, that was a top 10 life experience. So that's really what we were gunning for when we created the product. And now we can give away so much of what we teach and just give away value because the product is so, so strong when they do come into the community. So this year we have, instead of, you know, pulling back on the value to get that 5X growth, we really focused on giving away more value, giving away as much as we can, teaching whatever we can, helping in whatever way we can, and just getting sort of the message out to our target audience.
What else led to that growth?
Yeah, so in terms of actual tactics, there's sort of three key tactics that I think have made the biggest difference for us. One is getting partnerships. So if you have a good partnership network, that you're doing joint ventures with, or that that is willing to do a promotion to their group, then that is probably the number one easiest way just to get more leads coming in the door. And for us, it's really been an art of going out and literally finding the right partners, finding the right niches to go into, and figuring out how to develop relationships with those people so that you can create a win-win in the partnership. So this year, we did a partnership, for example, with a couple smaller players in our space, but it ended up leading to a partnership with Brian Tracy.
Oh, nice.
And that alone, I mean, if you think about that, and, you know, I don't think if I had reached out to the Brian Tracy team that they would have even opened my email. But because we had developed relationships with other people in the space and we got a warm intro to their team, then we were able to do a partnership with them. So it's things like that that you can't necessarily see the end game when you start to work about in partnerships, but there's no doubt the ROI is 100% there. So definitely, I think partnerships is an essential part of your marketing strategy. And it's something that I've only recently gotten turned on to and definitely has contributed to our growth this year. Now, the second thing is webinars. So webinars, I think, we've done webinars for years. So we have seen them in their heyday when, you know, everyone was watching webinars. And then there was this weird period where it felt like only freebie seekers were watching webinars. And then we've kind of come back to webinars because they're just such an efficient way to give away free value. And so we won't do webinars all the time. You know, we keep our schedule pretty tight around them. But then when we do them, we make a big deal. You know, we do live webinars and we feel, you know what I do is we feel really free just to be ourselves. So we don't follow necessarily a formula like the Russell Brunson formula, although, you know, that has worked for us in the past. We really try to put ourselves forward in a way that differentiates ourselves from everybody else. So an example of that is we do the webinars with a front-facing camera and we don't use slides. So it's literally just myself and my husband sitting and teaching. And then for an entire hour or hour and a half, people are getting exposure to our brand. They are forming a relationship with you. You know, because it's live, you're able to call out their name and answer their questions. Like, we want to get in front of people because that's how relationships are formed. And live webinars are an incredibly effective way to do that. So, you know, it's very common for us to get a 40% conversion just from a live webinar and then more in the follow-up sequence because we just are ourselves. We're passionate, people feel the energy, and we have a really great value proposition that we offer them on the webinar. So that third thing that I'm going to talk about is the value proposition. And for us, that has been a low-priced introductory membership group. So memberships are so hot right now. Everyone's talking about memberships, but I think what we do is slightly different. I'd be curious to get your take on this, Tom, but what we've done is we've tried to stack the value incredibly high in our introductory membership product. So what we do is we actually give away our $500 course with membership for free when we offer people our membership group. And I think a lot of, like, basically you want to stack the value in such a way that you as the person creating it goes like, oh, like that's a lot of value. Like that hurts a little bit. You know, like, I can't believe I'm giving away all this value for such a low price. Like, you need to have that feeling because otherwise the buyer is not going to have that feeling and they're not going to jump on the opportunity when you offer it. So that's how we've thought about crafting that membership product. And then of course the membership group itself, we pour attention into it. So, you know, we have those people think of themselves as part of our community because they signed up for a subscription product, right? Every month they're highly engaged because they want to see results or else they're not going to continue with us. And that sort of gives us a place to develop a relationship, and they're just as equally invested in developing a relationship with us. And once they get to know us, then most of the time they end up buying one of our other products as well.
How much are you charging for the membership?
So the membership is $37 a month.
And the actual free course that you're giving away, the value of that is $500?
Yep, because we literally sell that course for $500.
Okay.
And so that is the normal price, and we include that for free.
Yeah, I think that works really well. So the two things that I can say here is, one, when I teach my clients that I help market courses, I always tell them with the webinar, you know, you got to give the biggest piece of what you know for free up front. And it's got to hurt. It's got to hurt a lot. But then people will think, oh, you know, if he's giving this away or she's giving this away, I can't even believe what's going to be in the course, you know, because this is the one
thing. Exactly.
But what you're doing is very similar to what James Schramko is doing. I'm not sure if you know who that is.
No, I don't.
He runs superfastbusiness.com. So before, he created a lot of courses like Wealthification and I don't know all the names, but there's like five or six of them. And what he's done is he created the membership group, just like you, but he's charging quarterly. So it's about $97 per quarter because he found that the retention's better. You know, people don't like seeing money deducted every single month, you know, but every 3 months it hurts a little less. But he's giving away all of those courses with the membership. So a couple thousand dollars worth of courses with the membership. And it's working beautifully for him. I think the membership is making close to seven figures for him now.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So what you're doing is exactly what you should be doing. So I'm really glad you mentioned that. But yeah, 37 is good. I would maybe just play with the quarterly because it does hurt a little less. I
love that. I haven't heard about that. I'm definitely going to test that.
Yeah. Is there anything else? Because you've mentioned four things, but I think you said you had five before.
Those are the main things.
I
mean, let me take a look. Yeah. I mean, I think from a sort of more productivity standpoint, systemizing our content creation and outsourcing tasks has also been a really, really important part of our success this year. So things like producing content on a weekly basis for YouTube, and for other just, you know, mediums that we can distribute it on, I think that usually falls behind on for an online course creator. So we think of, you know, the content creation as sort of the last thing that we're going to be doing every week, because it just seems like, oh my God, they want even more free content. Like, come on, man. But honestly, like, that's the first thing that we do. That's sort of the main role that everyone does in the business. So we have all of our team members play some kind of role in us getting a YouTube video out every single week without fail. And we're just trying to increase the quality of production on that and the quality of the information, because when we do that, I mean, now we're finally getting people in the door who have just seen us on YouTube. They didn't get a referral. They didn't get onto our email list. It was like, I saw you guys on YouTube and I wanted to learn more. So that's sort of the goal, is to increase the mouth of the funnel.
Yeah. So how do you keep the sales funnel full? Is it mostly YouTube and Facebook, or is it paid advertising, the group? Like, what channels are you using for that?
I would say the top two channels are our membership group, because those people are incredibly hot. And number two is our email list. So we have a very efficient process. We're very focused on getting people into our email list and recovering our cost of marketing, and then remarketing to them and developing relationship again, giving away a lot of value, and displaying our personality and showing off what makes us different, and then converting them after 2 years of them being on our email list.
Any tips for getting people on the email list?
Yeah, I honestly test a lot of different lead magnets.
Yeah.
Just test, because you don't know what's going to work for people. You know, some of the things that I think are so awesome and high value, for some reason, don't capture people's attention when they're scrolling through their Facebook feed. So, and then, you know, one day I decided just to create a lead magnet for one of our morning and evening routines. I was like, well, let me just give these to people and see what they think of that. And it was honestly the easiest lead magnet I've ever created. I just wrote the ad copy once, and it consistently gets me about $1.50 leads. And now we've gotten over 6,000 people on our email list just through that one lead magnet. So honestly, like, I just kept testing to see what worked.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. What are the different price points of your of your products? Because I always tell people to have like a low price one, a mid range, and a high one. Are you kind of following that too?
Yeah, the ones that we struggle with the most is actually the mid range.
Yeah.
But we've, and you know, pricing is such an art. You know, it really is. And what the way we price is we always try to deliver 10x value on whatever we're charging. So we literally ask ourselves, okay, if someone's paying for our highest level product, are they going to get 10x value for that? So that's how we justify the price points. We have to always make sure the product is so good that they get that value. I think the mid-tier is where we have problems, because sometimes I feel like people scratch the itch, as it were, mm-hmm. by buying our mid-level product, and then they don't want to upsell because there's just not quite enough reason to, because they've sort of solved the problem enough that they don't feel like they need to keep going with it.
Right.
Maybe that's just a hunch. I don't have any proof of that, but that's the place that we still struggle. So we're still testing out that range.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. The one thing I've found that works for some people is creating in person a very small 5 to 6 people mastermind type group. And then that being the highest value, because that's, you know, one-on-one almost, you know, with a couple really high level people in the group.
Yep.
And then you can charge me, you know, that $10,000 or $5,000 per month with that. You know, and that's something you'll never scratch, because, you know, that's that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right. The mid-level ones, unless you have that very personal high-level one, it's difficult to sell that.
Yeah, and scale is another thing to consider. So I think what we've done is it's worked really well for us. I'd be curious to hear your take, Tom, is instead of selling private coaching as our premium product, which of course, you know, private coaching is, you can make a lot of money with it, but you can only take a limited number of clients and truly serve them well. We've created boot camps, so 60-day experiences, where we can serve as many as 50 people, probably more. We just haven't tried it yet. And the experience is not just the same as private coaching. It's actually better because of the group experience. And we integrate a lot of group accountability and team structures and that kind of thing, and friendly competitiveness. And it juices the results for people. And at the same time, it makes it drastically less work for us per person, because they're not just reliant on us to provide the experience for them. They are, you know, they're talking with the other group members. They've got their buddy, you know, we've got other people that are coaching them, right? And so the work on us on a, you know, a weekly basis is much, much less.
Yeah, I've seen that on your landing page. And my initial thought was, this is insane or brilliant.
Good. I'm so glad that you thought that.
Yeah, because it's a lot of commitment on your end too. You know, 60 days, you know, especially if you're traveling or moving around. But that's someone that goes through a 60-day boot camp, that's pretty much one of the 1,000 true fans. No one else would
exactly
really do that. So if you do enough of those, and I was starting to calculate, like within 4 or 5 years, you have 1,000 true fans. Like it would be, that's it. That's all you need.
Yep.
But once again, it's a lot of commitment. You know, it's and then you need to do the launches properly, because you have to get the funnel filled up for the next 50 and the next 50, you know?
Yeah, well, honestly, we do sales on a rolling basis. We don't do launches. We have sales calls every single week. And there's periods where we're more focused on it because the boot camp is about to launch. And so we really want to make sure it's filled and that kind of thing. But we're at the point where we're actually waitlisting people because the thing is, if you have a strong enough relationship with them, you know, you don't need to create excitement out of a launch or using some other marketing technique. You know, they'll wait to get involved with you. So they'll be willing to sign up, and then the boot camp might not start for 2 months, and they're totally fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm loving what you guys are doing. You know, when the more I hear about it too, I'm like, wow, this is great. I hope people take some of this stuff and, you know, get more productive or get their lives back. It just sounds right. You know, I like it. And the Brian Tracy, you know, it's That's the guy I used to listen to when I was like in the car going to sales calls.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, yep. He's legit. He is legit. Brian Tracy definitely is legit. You know, that's one of those old timers, you know.
Oh yeah. He's been around longer than any of us. Yeah, we were like newbies compared to him.
Yeah, I always tell people like Brian Tracy probably forgot more than I'll ever learn.
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome. Carrie, I'm really glad that you came on. Where can people find you?
Yeah, they can find me at lifehackbootcamp.com, lifehackbootcamp.com. You'll see all sorts of links there. There's even my email address on it and a lot of other free courses and content that we give out. So definitely check that out if you're interested in learning more.
Awesome. Thank you again.
Thanks so much for having me.